It begins, as you might remember it, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Yahoo! But this version is a little different. This is Star Wars: A New Hope in Anishinaabe Mohan. Anangong Migading had its world premiere in Winnipeg last month. Here at the Centennial Concert Hall, Indigenous nerds and language enthusiasts packed in excited to watch a film they grew up with in a new way.
Can I see your ticket? So you're going Portal 3?
Some came in specially made ribbon skirts, like the Simmons family, who brought three generations of fans.
Where did you even find this fabric?
So it was difficult to find, but I had my sources and, you know, my First Nation telegraph, I found them. And believe it or not, all of the ribbons are significant of a teaching. So we've got Chewbacca, of course, is my daughter's favorite character of all time. And then my sister is deep in the dark side, the red and the black representing the dark side, greed, evil. My mom, our OG fan, we made Star Wars with the ribbons of her famous and favorite Jedi Masters, which are Yoda, Luke, and Mace Windu.
A little further into the crowd, Jedi, lightsabers, and a little Leia.
Star Wars!
You look so adorable. And even some Star Wars-inspired regalia.
Well, I was calling this Mohawk formal.
Anangong Migading, Star Wars, A New Hope. The Force is strong with this one.
I'm so proud of you.
I'm so happy you guys were here, too.
Tanse, Anine, Buju, hello and welcome. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. It's premiere night in Winnipeg. The popcorn is popping. The orchestra is playing that familiar song. People are posing with bounty hunters over in the corner. Royalty is in attendance by way of Queen Amidala. A big backdrop reads Star Wars Anangong Migading. And there's even a red carpet. Voice actors are lined up, chatting with reporters, wearing their best ribbon shirts, dresses, and vests.
All of my friends, we grew up watching it. We played it in the woods.
There's Han Solo, a.k.a. Ajua Kapashisit.
Like getting opportunities to like live out those dreams and hear our language at the same time, it's great. Why can't we do that? And we should do it more.
Princess Leia.
And I just take it all in.
Who in real life is Teresa Aishin, an educator who's passionate about passing on Anishinaabe Mohan.
Well, it's about equity. I mean, a lot of times our movies are made in English, and this is an opportunity for our language to shine, and maybe someday movies will be made in Anishinaabe Mohan first and English subtitles later.
And the baddest Sith Lord of them all, Darth Vader.
Mean Kibaba. I am your father.
Or should I say, Darth Dennis.
Never in my dreams did I ever think I'd be able to contribute to, with our language at this capacity. But I'm also inside of me, like my thought is opening something new, opening a new doorway for our people into the future.
This beloved movie is giving a new hope for language revitalization. Plus, we step away from the red carpet and into the world of cosplay to meet Laura Husky. She really, really loves Skywalker Mom and Queen Padme Amidala.
She was just like the coolest character, and I wanted to be her so bad.
So much so, Laura created a cosplay with a small cultural adjustment.
If I just made some changes, some little tweaks, I could do my own Choctaw spin on this.
Today, Star Wars, the Indigenous version. Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo, and Darth Vader. These are the Star Wars characters we remember. We grew up playing them with our wrapping paper rolled lightsabers and upside down garbage pail droids. We love them, or love to hate them. Now, the Ojibwe or Anishinaabe Mohan version is giving this classic story new life. Joining me are three of the voice actors for Star Wars Anangong Migading: Darth Vader, also known as Dennis Chartrand, Princess Leia, also known as Teresa Aishin, and Han Solo, our reluctant hero, also known as Azua Kapishisit. Dennis, Teresa, Azuak, welcome to Unreserved.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Now let's start with Darth Vader, who is the most amazing anti-villain of all time. Darth Dennis, you make an early appearance in this 1977 sci-fi classic. What did it take to channel your inner Darth?
It was very easy. I was part of the adaptation team where I already knew what was going to be said. So I had to also practice in doing all the characters, actually. But when it came to the actual recording, we had a really great coach from Hollywood, Ellen Stern. And she was just an incredible coach for us to really get into the part. Because for us as Indigenous people, we'll have moments of expression, like happiness or anger or whatever our emotions are, but they only last for a little while, right? But for the movie, you had to play this character for a length period of time. And so it was really great support from Ellen, who supported us to maintain the character throughout the whole recording of it.
Did you ever think in your whole entire life that you would be playing Darth Vader?
Never. I've always loved acting. Winston Watney was one that I see when I seen him on Sesame Street. I felt so proud that day that we have Indigenous people on screen. And yeah, I used to be cute at one time. But my voice is going to be on this blockbuster movie just beyond how I thought I'd be able to share in language. So just thanking Lucasfilms for having the courage to support our language this way.
Now, Teresa, a.k.a. Princess Leia, now, you're the real hero of this story, in my humble opinion. You survived interrogation and witnessed the destruction of your home planet of Alderaan, but you still kept the plan secret and were able to get them to the rebel camp. What was it like taking on this dynamic role?
Well, I was honored to take this role on. You know, Princess Leia, she's very resilient. She's a leader. She's opinionated. She's strong-voiced and... You know, she was a wonderful character to play. I really, when I studied my lines, you know, I looked at Carrie Fisher and how she said her lines and then automatically say my lines in the Anishinaabe Imaawin. Because I was just struggling a little bit with portraying Princess Leia without, you know, kind of abandoning my natural accent and speaking in Anishinaabe Imaawin. Because you can't really sound like the way you normally sound when you speak the language, right? So you had to kind of play that character.
Now, did you wear the iconic Hopi buns while you were doing the role?
Or... I pretended I had them on. I asked my niece to try to put my hair like that. It wasn't long enough. I don't know what Carrie Fisher did, but I'd like to know that story because it did not, my hair is pretty long, but
yeah.
It still was not long enough to do those gigantic cinnamon buns.
What scene was the most fun for you to do in Ojibwe?
I really love that line that's it played in the trailer. The one that says, can you tell that big hairy thing to get out of my way? Go into Mokchimishis, like a skunk.
You know, I love that line.
Yeah, it's such a cool line. And I thought that right at the beginning, before I went into the recording room, that was my favorite line. And it's funny how they managed to, you know, use that line in the trailer.
Wow, that's amazing. That just gave me goosebumps.
All right, well, take care of yourself, hon. I guess that's what you're best at, isn't it?
Now, Han Solo, Azuak, if my Star Wars trivia is correct, you're the first to say the line, the very iconic line.
Hey, Luke.
As Luke is off to save the universe, you say...
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you. How does that sound in Ojibwe?
Oh, so in Ojibwe, you say, Mamanda was a Wingagaminaguiz. I learned it from Dennis in the script there. I grew up not as a speaker of the language, but I studied it and learned it a lot when I was in school. And so, you know, this project in particular was a challenge in a lot of different ways. Talking about the weather or talking, exchanging pleasantries with friends is one thing. But then when you're talking about starships and blasters and things like that, that's not vocab that we went over when I was in school. There were some moments I had to like really take my time to get it right.
And of course, Han Solo is the ultimate anti-hero. What was the best like favorite scene for you to dub, taking on that role?
Like, there's so many iconic Han Solo lines. Like every 5 minutes, he says something that you're going to hear again and again the rest of your life. One of the ones that stands out to me was definitely the back and forth with Greedo and Han right at the beginning of the film. And then, you know, that him speaking with Jabba, trying to like get a little bit more time, just need a little more time. Like all that was great. But then like also is the moment when they break into the Death Star's, you know, detention center. And, you know, he has to get on the speakerphone and just be like, oh, you know, like everything's fine. Like, no, I know you're hearing explosions, but that just really it's nothing.
Everything's under control. Situation normal.
What happened?
Hit a slight weapons malfunction, but everything's perfectly all right now. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
And like rewatching the movie, you're like, wow, this is just hilarious a lot of the time.
We're in conversation anyway. Luke, we're going to have company.
And as an actor, was that something that you ever thought you would do, is like playing this iconic role?
Oh, like playing Han Solo? No, never in a million years. Like, you know, like this movie's been around my whole life, and it's been something that I've always really like have loved and drawn on as inspiration of why to do this work. You know, like you just assume that like one day I'm going to look and hopefully find my own Star Wars and do my own project that feels like that. And then all of a sudden you get this call, or in this case, this email from Lucasfilm. And they're like, yeah, do you want to be Han Solo? And I'm just like, oh, I've been waiting my entire life for somebody to ask that question. So yes, actually I am prepared already.
Well, you know, we've talked a little bit about the dubbing process and, you know, how you were guided through it. What did that process look like?
I've done some projects where like you're doing ADR, so I've had a little bit of practice with that. But then like you get in the booth and you have the director, Alan Stern, there, who, you know, she's the legend. She's been doing this work for a long time. She did the Navajo Ojibwe project a few years back as well. And so, you know, she's kind of versed in how to do this type of work specifically, like this film working with Indigenous communities. And so I was really lucky that I had an Ojibwe speaker around all the time to help me out. So in some instances, it was Dennis who would be there. Pat was also there as well. We'd hear the English, we would hear the Ojibwe, and we would talk about it. I always defer to the speakers who are going to know a little bit more if I'm getting my intonation right, or if I'm doing this part right. But then also, again, kind of navigating performance on top of that, because in some instances, there's going to be some things that are in Ojibwe, not the exact one-to-one translation of the English. And mm-hmm. So you have to kind of navigate back and forth of like, okay, like, English-speaking Han Solo says this, Ojibwe-speaking Han Solo says this. So it was navigating that, and everybody was super game to try to figure it out and make sure that everything was fitting with what we wanted the character to say and the intensity of the moment, which was a lot of fun.
It sounds like a really complicated, you know, process. You know, were you in a booth with somebody? Were you all around a table? Did you watch the movie and then go back and do it so you got it all, like, in your head?
No, it was, for me, as part of my prep, I just watched the movie over and over again, which is, you know, like the best job in the world is you just get to sit down and watch Star Wars and call it working for the day. But then like on the day, like we're in an actual sound booth. They have your script in front of you, they give you a little light, and then the screen where it shows you the scene and what the audience is seeing, because a big piece of it is also you're trying to match your mouth to what's being said at the same time. So it doesn't feel really out of place for people. So there's a lot of moments when we're doing the dub where I'm like, I don't know how we're going to fit this long of an Ojibwe word in like this much English. But, you know, we found a way to make it work.
Darth Dennis, you have worked with the Anishinaabemowin in many capacities, from your own radio show to your own classroom at the University of Manitoba. How does this latest project contribute to your work as a language knowledge keeper?
Oh, there's so much to doing a project like this. I've always dreamed of it, but having actual experience doing it with such a blockbuster movie, it's just incredible. There's so much learning that I went through in the whole process of the interpretation of the movie. It's funny, Han Solo is one of the biggest lip flappers, but we don't have the same sounds or lip movements as English speaking. We don't have O's, and we have A, I, U, E, I, U, A. like those sounds. And sometimes we had to find something or a middle ground. Sometimes we couldn't. And then maintaining the value of the scene or what the words, actual words were. But what it ended up being is always, I always say this, that our language, because our language is comes from a place of like the expression verbs and saying things like it is, it really, I'll say this in a humble and non-biased way, that our language enhanced the movie. It's already a great movie, but having our language come into that kind of a movie where it shows the plight of a rebel cause against the trying to convince the empire, you know, of the giftedness of it. It's like our life, right? So
yeah, it sounds a little familiar.
it came together so great. And that's what I'm hoping people will be able to see. Now it's opening up our opportunity, or even just seeing how we can share our language. And of course, our culture is attached to that.
That's beautiful. Princess Teresa, you're a voice actor, but you're also an educator by trade. What impacts do you think like projects like this can have on language learners?
I think it just encourages, we're telling them that our language is still alive. Mm-hmm. And we can find new innovative ways to teach language. I know for me, I'm going to probably use this movie and incorporate it in my classroom. I could already see myself using the lines and getting the kids to do drama and, you know, reenacting the movie, or using the lines and putting it in a different context or setting. People might not realize that we can use this to teach youth. We can teach anybody who wants to learn.
I love the idea of little Princess Leia's and Han Solo's running around. Ajwak, in addition to being an actor, writer, and director, you're also a trained linguist. How would you describe the growth and resilience of Indigenous language speakers?
Oh, it's really inspiring, honestly. You know, like there's so many speakers out there like Dennis who are continuing to use their language and advocate for their language and get more and more opportunities like this to happen. And I think that without that leadership, without that guidance, a lot of these efforts wouldn't be as fulfilling and as powerful as they are. Because speakers like Dennis, like Pat and others are really, they keep all of that knowledge for us. But also the language needs to be used outside of the school. And this gives people a great opportunity to do that, because now they can come home after a long day and they want to sit on the couch and watch a movie. Why not watch Ojibwe Star Wars? And I think that that's one of the great things happening right now, is this continued expansion of opportunities to hear the language, whether it's through radio, through television, through movies, through just the internet in general, or people just getting opportunities in places where the language access is limited. And so it's a good opportunity to find access in ways that wasn't accessible before. So it's a really exciting time.
Mm-hmm. And as you send this dubbed film out into the galaxy, as it were, what is your hope for, how it will help language grow?
For me, any language project that I work on is always honoring the people that have taught us, that have brought us to this point to be able to share, especially in this movie. I've always felt the presence of people that contributed to me, my grandmother, my mother, my father, my relatives, my teachers. Pat Niguan's a big mover in our language. My late mentor, Roger Roulette Ipan, Charlie Nelson Ipan, like my teachers, where they're like sitting with me sometimes when I'm doing the work. It always feels that we're able to contribute into the future by just doing our best, our parts in language. And so just a huge appreciation for all the people that have brought this forward to take it on. Sometimes we don't mention, and I want to mention Dugald Lamont was the first to have the conversations with Mayangan, and asked, got to Michael Cohn, who's part of Lucasfilms, to bring this forward. And then, of course, having Pat get on board right away, and her calling me too, like just so much blessing, I'll say, around being in language, that we can continue to create spaces for our language. So this is one really great way that it just goes beyond anything that we from the bush, have ever dreamed of. And so what a great honor.
And Teresa, what about for you?
I think like my hope is that it'll engage new language learners and both non-Indigenous and Indigenous. We have to all decolonize ourselves, and you know it promotes reconciliation to acknowledge that our language is still alive and it's always going to continue. We all have a part to play. We are a piece of a bigger puzzle, and so it's very huge.
Yes, absolutely. And it's an amazing film. I can't wait to see the film in Anishinaabemowin. Thank you so much to all of you for your time today. Appreciate it.
To me, Gretchen.
Thank you.
Dennis Chartrand is the Ojibwe voice actor of Darth Vader, Teresa Aishin as Princess Leia, and Ajua Kapishisit as Han Solo. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Star Wars has been played by generations of kids in countless backyards over the years. One of those kids was Laura Husky. In particular, she loves Padme Amidala. That's Natalie Portman's character from the prequel trilogy, released from 1999 to 2005. Padme is a queen, a senator, and Luke and Leia's mom. Earlier this year, Laura took her love of Padme to the Indigipop X Indigenous Pop Culture Convention. But she wasn't just any Padme, she was Choctaw Padme. And thanks to a labor of love with her family, she created a cosplay that also served as a message to other young Indigenerds.
My name is Laura Husky. I am 23 years old, and I am from the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. And I have really liked Star Wars since I was a kid. I was first introduced to Star Wars when I was playing with my brother. A lot of times we bonded by playing video games, and we played the Lego Star Wars game. And it was so much fun for me, and I always, every single time we played it, I was like, I want to be Padme. I'm going to be Padme. She's the only character that I want to be right now. I liked all the different costumes she had. I loved that she was always just wearing something new, something kind of flashy, something fun. And then seeing her in like the movies and everything she does, and she's this fighter, and she's standing up for herself, standing up for other people.
You call this a diplomatic solution?
No, I call it aggressive negotiations.
She was just like the coolest character, and I wanted to be her so bad.
If the Viceroy escapes, Your Highness, he will return with another droid army.
Well, that is why we must not fail to get the Viceroy. Everything depends on it.
Indigipop X is basically, it's Indigenous Comic-Con. It's a gathering of all of these Indigenous creatives, Indigenous fans. I was actually working the event my first year. I worked at the First Americans Museum where it was hosted, and I was just seeing all of these cool costumes and all of this creativity and everyone just having so much fun dressing up, like playing all of these characters and just getting to be nerds with each other. And I was like, oh, I really want to do that. The competition at Indigipop X was for all the cosplayers. They had a bunch of different categories for people to enter into. I decided, I was like, if they have it again here next year, I am gonna go and I'm gonna make something that I really like, and I'm gonna try and enter the contest. I came up with the idea to cosplay Choctaw Padme because I was looking at some of her dresses, and then I was looking at my dresses that I have in my closet, and I was like, hey, those could be kind of similar. Those I could, if I just made some changes, some little tweaks, I could do my own Choctaw spin on this. I really struggled growing up finding Indigenous representation for my culture. What there was, I couldn't see myself in. They were Native, but they weren't Native the way that I was Native, and so I couldn't relate to them. I was like, this isn't me, this isn't who I am, this isn't my culture, my people. So I wanted to do that and then make myself a character that I could fully relate to. And I thought, what better character to do it with than my all-time favorite character since I was a child? I wanted to kind of fulfill my dreams, I guess, of when I was little, of just getting to see myself and wear a pretty dress and see my culture represented. The one fit that I really latched onto that I thought could be translated to Choctaw was her Queen Amidala fit in The Phantom Menace. It's that red dress with the face makeup, with the big hair, the big crown. It's so over the top, it's so extra. And our Choctaw dresses, in my opinion, I love them, but they are definitely a little bit extra because we love our bling. We love the ruffles. We love everything, like all the details and stuff about it. So whenever I saw that dress, I was like, I think that's a really good dress to be able to translate because it's iconic. People would recognize it. And the structure of it is kind of similar. Like I could make it work. And then I translated it to Choctaw. Instead of the big robe, I just did a Choctaw dress and I changed the sleeves on it. Instead of the big crown, I gave her a round comb. Her big hair bun, I made it into a Choctaw hair bun. And that was really important for me to incorporate because the Choctaw bun is one that a lot of people aren't aware of. They aren't aware that we had like a traditional hairstyle like that. And so I'm trying to bring more awareness to the fact that we did, like, we had fun hairstyles and stuff too, like before everything. And I'm trying to get it back so more people will see it and more people will try and wear it. My favorite parts of the dress that I made, I wanted to do diamonds on it originally because diamonds are pretty recognizably Choctaw. But I didn't have the time, so I instead went with the way our old style dresses were. And that is with, you put rickrack on your sleeves, on the skirt, you do that instead. Rickrack is kind of ribbon that goes up and down, kind of like a wave. For Choctaws, it represents our snakes, it represents the hills and valleys in our homelands. So being able to put that on a dress too was something really important to me. It was so important to me to be able to make her face makeup recognizably Padme, but also still Choctaw. In the movie, she has her traditional face paint, so I decided I'll do it traditional Choctaw. So I drew two red lines on my cheeks. They're called bridal tattoos. And so it goes from the corner of your mouth to your jawbone. Kind of depends on each person where it will end, but it's really cool for me to be able to show that to people so that they can see it and that it can become more common for them. I did not do this all alone. My mom definitely helped me a lot. She's the one that taught me how to sew. She's still teaching me, so I still have a lot to learn. She was definitely like, well, that's gonna be a lot of work, but I went to her, I was like, okay, I showed her my sketches. I was like, what do I have to do to make this? And she started telling me everything. She's like, okay, you're probably gonna need about this much fabric. You're gonna need some of this. You're gonna need this bias tape. You're gonna need all of these different supplies. I don't think she thought I was gonna commit to it, but I did. Those last 2 weeks before the con, we were rushing, we were trying to get everything done. She even, on the day of, she was the one doing the finishing touches for me while I was doing my makeup. The last detail was actually the zipper. The morning of the con, I wasn't sure I was gonna make it, to be perfectly honest. I was getting really anxious and like antsy. My older sister, she was helping me get ready. She was helping me with my makeup and with my hair. And my makeup just wasn't looking right. And I was like, oh, I can't do this. I shouldn't even go. I shouldn't even go and try. And then she was like, Laura, you need to chill out. You're gonna go. You worked so hard on this. We got it all together last minute. Then we drove there and I was still so anxious.
This is Queen Amidala from Star Wars, but in Choctaw style.
I was scared as I was getting up on stage, but once I hit this actual stage itself, in my head, I was like, okay, just be like her. Be calm, be graceful, trying my best to emulate what I think Padme is. I wasn't sure I was gonna get anything for it because they weren't calling my name at all. And then they called my name for the Best in Show and I was like, oh my gosh, are you serious? It was kind of shocking. I was the overall winner of the entire cosplay competition. It was just so surreal. It felt so cool. I was so surprised because I was like, this is my first competition that I've done And then after winning, I immediately called my mom and I was like, guess what? We won. I told my sister too, and they were all like, yeah, well, aren't you glad you did it now? And I was like, yeah, I am. The message that I would want my cosplay to send is, if you don't have your own representation, it's okay to just make it up. It's okay to take something that you really like and put your own spin on it. There's not a lot of representation for us out there. It's getting better, but it's not where it should be. So if I could tell anything to young Indigenous creatives out there, go and make what you want. Go and draw that thing you wanted to do, make those characters, sew that dress, sew anything, do all of this. You're doing it for you, for the young kid that wanted this representation so bad, but you're also doing it for all of those other younger Indigenous kids that are out there and they're not seeing themselves in anything. You're showing them that other people are doing it too and that they can do it. If younger Laura could see everything that I'm doing now, I think she would be like shocked to her core. Like, she would be amazed at everything that I've been up to. But seeing Choctaw Padme, I think young me, man, she would be at a loss for words. She wouldn't know what to say. And she would just see that I did get to be my favorite character, but I got to be my favorite character in my own way, in a way that was more authentic to me.
Laura Husky is a 23-year-old Choctaw citizen with Cherokee Shawnee descent. She is a digital artist and a lifelong Star Wars fan. You can find a photo of Laura's Choctaw Padme cosplay on our CBC Radio Unreserved Facebook page. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, get your lightsabers out. We are back at the Anishinaabe Moen premiere of Star Wars, Unangog Megadeng. And we're just in time.
Well, movie reviews, what did you think?
I liked it. I loved it. It was so good. Just to hear them speak in Ojibwe, what a way to bring back the language.
Are you freaking out? How did you love it?
It was so cool. Like, it's just because there's a few words that are very similar to Cree, so it was really touching my heart, so I was very happy.
What was your favorite part of the movie?
Probably whenever anybody started to speak in Anishinaabe, well, Moen for the first time, and everybody would cheer. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
Thoughts, my friend, thoughts.
Oh my goodness, right off the bat when we heard our community just cheer, oh, it felt so great. Yeah, it was great. I didn't fall asleep this time. The whole thing.
That was Margaret Simmons, Sonia Ballantyne, and Dennis Chartrand giving 4 out of 4 stars for Star Wars Unangog Megadeng. You're listening to Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Creating a galaxy for Star Wars is one thing. Translating that galaxy? Well, that took a hero duo. The translation project was the result of a collaboration between the Dakota Ojibwe Tribal Council, the University of Manitoba, Disney Lucasfilm, and APTN. It's the second time the original Star Wars has been officially translated into an Indigenous language, with the first being Navajo in 2013. The Anishinaabe language dub of Star Wars, A New Hope, would not have been possible without the expertise of Carrie Miller and Pat Ningawants. Carrie was the project manager for the film and is an associate professor at the University of Manitoba. Pat Ningawants is Bear Clan from Lac Seul First Nation and the lead translator and language supervisor for the film. Carrie, Pat, welcome to Unreserved.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So let's start with the obvious questions. Why did you want to be part of this project? Pat, let's start with you.
I became part of the project because Maingan Linklater at DOTC approached me when he first got things going. I'm at the university with Carrie. I'm assistant professor there teaching Ojibwe. And this became one of my projects.
And Mayangan happens to be related to you, right?
He's my son. And I took him to Star Wars when he was 3. So we have a history.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, your son is also involved, who has a very interesting middle name, Jedi.
That's my grandson, yeah, Andik Muldrew.
What was it like having to, you know, be able allowed to work with your family on such a project that had such a family history for you?
Totally wonderful, especially working with Andik, who is a fluent speaker of Ojibwe, thanks to his mom and I.
Carrie, what about for you?
Well, for me, when Mayangan first reached out and asked if the university wanted to be a partner as we looked at applying for federal funding for the project, I was really excited to be involved. I've been a lifelong Star Wars fan. I must have seen it when I was 7 in 1977, about 5 or 6 times in the theater. So I was the demographic, I think. I've just always wanted to see much more media dubbed into our languages. I think that, you know, however many learning opportunities our youth have, if we can also have more language opportunities for them to continue hearing and practicing the language in their leisure time, that the more reinforcement we have, the more places and spaces our language is present, the more we can reinforce the language. But also, Star Wars is a project that sort of inspires our youth to see the language as part of a potential future, and helps, you know, hopefully will inspire them in that way too.
It's especially important because people in my age group were dying, and with us is our language. So we need to leave behind oral language, and a project like this is one example.
Of course, translating into Anishinaabemowin and from English is not as easy as some people, you know, might think. The Force, for example, as Obi-Wan Kenobi teaches us, is something that's in all of us, but also exclusive to the Star Wars universe. What is the Anishinaabemowin for the Force?
That wasn't actually difficult to translate because we have that belief. That's what we believe in. Amanda was doing. That's something mystical, something, a force.
And are the concepts similar to what we understand the force to be?
Yes. The problem lay in our word being so long. And may the force be with you is such a short sentence. Ours is takes a long time to say. Kegamini go is Amanda was doing.
Wow, that is quite a mouthful. And what about the concept of lightsaber, which I don't imagine our ancestors were running around with lightsabers?
That wasn't too bad either, because we just translated it as light, you know, the light that we see. And knife, I think, is the word we used. A knife made out of light.
Did you have difficulty or challenges at all in coming up with science fiction words in Anishinaabemowin? Oh,
definitely. What I did was make a glossary at the beginning to deal with those terms. I did the best I could, but then I got a bunch of guys to help me.
Oh.
You know? And they speak Ojibwe, and they were the other translators that I called in after I translated the entire script. So we worked on those terms and grappling with them, you know, because some of them we don't even understand in English what they are because they're not there yet.
These guys that you recruited, were they also Star Wars nerds? They have to have the nerd aspect in there?
I think so.
I was just going to say the other important thing about the team that Pat pulled together is that they were from different dialect areas. So part of the intent was also to ensure that the film would be understood across all of our Anishinaabe dialects. We're such a largely dispersed nation geographically that we do have some of these slight dialect differences. And that was important to us, even as it's a fiction piece about people from all over the galaxy. And so there was already some room for some dialect differences among characters.
How many dialects are there in Ojibwe?
As many communities there are.
Really?
Well, almost.
Mm-hmm. Is there a scene that stands out to you as particularly challenging to translate into the language?
There's the one where Luke and Leia and Han and Chewie meet up again.
What kept you?
We are running some old friends.
And the original line is sarcastic, so where Leia says, we ran into some old friends. And you were explaining to me how that sarcasm doesn't translate well in Ojibwe. Mm-hmm.
There were many scenes like that where the English, it just couldn't be translated. The other reason was because our translation didn't fit the time. So we would have to put in some expression that we could just fit in there.
Yeah, there were two stages. The one was a very close direct translation of the script. And then we met a month later, and that's what's called the adaptation. And that's where we work to match the length of the lines in Ojibwe and English.
And if it starts with an M or a B, ours has to as well, you know, so that it'll look like that's what they're saying. Mm. It had to also end with a vowel. I mean, not a vowel, a consonant that would match the lip movements of the actor. Otherwise, that's the only way it would look that person was actually saying that word.
Yeah, you didn't want it to be like those old school movies where the actor's lips stop moving.
Yeah, the 70s kung fu films.
It was, you know, late last year that we learned that Lucasfilm, the Dakota Ojibwe Tribal Council, and the University of Manitoba reached an agreement to record a dubbed Ojibwe version of Star Wars. Pat or Carrie, what assurances did you need from Lucasfilms as you entered this agreement?
Well, Lucasfilm has already teamed up with DOTC when the university joined. Certainly, we were given a lot of lead on the translation. What they wanted was to have the final say on casting. Other than that, what Lucasfilm really put on the table that was foundationally important is that they offered to do the sound mixing. And that was done with Sky Sound at Skywalker Ranch. You know, so all of the sound effects are the original sound effects. It's completely authentic. And the way, as we did the adaptation, they literally have each of the lines numbered and then sort of the length, the time stamp of that. So as they mix it, they're literally inserting the Anishinaabe line by our voice actor into that original soundtrack. We had a grant from the federal government, but it was not endless. This whole project is nonprofit with a lot of, you know, donated time, and the Sky Ranch mixing was donated. So sometimes we had a week to do a certain piece of it. And because sometimes we would hit unexpected snags, it would mean the days would get very long.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I hoped that we would be able to train people, train the actors, train anybody that was involved in a secondary way, because we'll need that for future projects.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really important that this not be a one-off, that we continue to translate major films. And one of the other important things that Disney and Pixelogic worked on with us was not only is it dubbed audially in the language, it also has language subtitles, which makes it a great teaching tool, but is really a first. Being someone from the university where we are developing indigenous language programs, both because it's important, but also, you know, certainly it's a TRC recommendation that universities do so. But one of the things we hear from students is, well, what job am I going to have if I do that? And certainly developing a dubbing industry is something that will create jobs directly related to majoring in indigenous language, even as it's creating all of this important content that we need to continue our languages and keep our youth inspired to learn their language.
Speaking of, you know, passing on language and teaching and keeping that alive, as we mentioned earlier, your grandson, Andug, speaks the language and, yes, and also played Luke Skywalker in, yes, this film. What's it like to see a younger generation like your grandson pick it up and to keep it so strongly alive?
Oh, it is totally beautiful. I'm grateful that he can speak it, but he's also inspirational to others of his age group. Mm-hmm. He's part of a network of young learners who are helping each other to become speakers. They take part in language courses, language camps, online learning. So I think it'll grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carrie, what does doing a project like this tell you about the resilience of the Anishinaabe language?
That resilience is a really important piece, and my first experience learning language, and it's been a real struggle for me. I don't pick up languages easily, but I first started taking classes over near Sault Ste. Marie, where a lot of the instructors were coming from Wiquemecong. This was back in the 1990s, and they would talk about two reasons why the language wasn't being passed on to their youth. And the first one, you know, certainly was residential school, but the other was, they would say specifically, when cable came to the island. Hmm. And so that preponderance of English media that then just becomes what children pick up. And so ever since then, I've had a real interest in finding ways to facilitate getting more media into our languages. And even Pat and I were having a conversation a week or so ago where she was saying there used to be a lot more Indigenous language radio, mm-hmm, than there is today. And I think, you know, looking at ways that both we can really move an Indigenous language media industry forward, but also, you know, lean into encouraging government to fund Indigenous language learning and media the way that they do French, are very important steps in this resilience. But we have to have projects like Star Wars that children want to engage in, that children choose to engage in. If they only see it in school, it feels like school.
Mm-hmm. Mm, excellent point. And you said this resilience, but I think you should have said this resistance. Stay on theme, Carrie.
Absolutely.
Pat, what do you hope that this film will accomplish? You spoke to, you know, rejuvenating language, investing in the language. What do you hope to see?
When you talk of resilience, there is also the difficulty we've had in young people learning their language. They get stuck in their throats. They can't pronounce. Has nothing to do with intelligence or anything like that. It's a psychological thing. And for people my age, too, in passing it on to the next generation, it's been there for a long, long time. But if we keep on coming up with innovative projects like this, it will enliven,
yeah,
the language.
Do you see a time when, you know, we'll have, you know, our own channel with our different Indigenous languages or movies dubbed in our own languages?
I want to take this time to talk about my 50-year plan.
Please
I
do.
I love a 50-year plan.
Yes, yes. I began writing it over the winter. It's what I envisioned to happen in 50 years, and it will happen. It will. You have to have that kind of belief to make it happen. So in 50 years, the language will be alive. It'll be spoken in pockets. And in that pocket of a language, a community, students will be able to attend university in their language. That's what I wanted when I was a teenager. I really wished I could go to a university, study in my own language, study all the culture, the thoughts, philosophy behind it in my language, like the French can do if they go to France or even Quebec. You know, we don't have that. And the hospital will be in Ojibwe, a school from all ages, stores, everything would be in the language. because each village that's made like that, its purpose will be to keep the language alive. And that's what I want to happen. So projects like this have a place in that 50-year plan. We need more projects like this. We need to develop terminology, any kind of terminology, not just Star Wars futuristic terminology, but in every aspect of our lives. Oh, there's so much I could say about my plan, but I believe it will happen.
Mm. Well, that is an excellent vision and goals for the future, Pat. I look forward to having that come true. And Carrie, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
May the Fourth be with you. No, the Force be with you. I don't know. I'm a Star Trek fan.
Uh-oh.
Pat Ningawants is Bear Clan from Lac Seul First Nation and was the lead translator and language supervisor for Star Wars, Unengog Megading. Gary Miller was the project manager and is an associate professor at the University of Manitoba. That's almost all our time on Radio Indigenous. But before I let you go, I want to tell you about a project our friends over at CBC Music are working on. The CBC Music Class Challenge is back, and this year it enlisted the help of Shawnee Kish and Christy Talbot. The Mohawk sisters combined their love of music and language to write an original song for this year's contest. It sounds like this. I won't fade. Light the way with the strength. We are colors of the rays. Oh, imagine San Antonio go. Oh, imagine San Antonio go. And we walk. That's Yohahiyo or the Good Road. Here's what Shawnee and Christy had to say about how they hope the song is received by kids across the country.
I hope that it not only celebrates the Indigenous Mohawk language, but it also, you know, it intrigues the minds of both Indigenous youth, but non-Indigenous also, to feel closer to just Indigenous people, especially here in Canada, and to ask questions and learn more about it, but to have fun with the song and to feel inspired by the song and to feel like just inquisitive in general and kind of getting to know the song for me, I would say.
Mm. And for you, Christy?
It's always about the language for me. It makes me so happy whenever the language is in the hearts and minds of people. As you may know, our Indigenous languages in this country are... they're in danger, and we want to see them being shared. And I think that welcoming allies to become a part of that and to feel passionate enough to share that with the kids in their lives, because we know that educators have that power to make a difference in our next generation. And so just getting it into that classroom and getting everybody to share it, that's how we're going to keep our languages alive.
Shawnee Kish is a Juno-nominated Two-Spirit Mohawk singer-songwriter, and Christy Talbot is Mohawk and an early childhood educator. You can find more about their song and the CBC Canadian Music Class Challenge at cbc.ca/musicclass. Unreserved is produced by Kim Casher, Rhiannon Johnson, Elena Hudgens-Lyle, and Bridget Stringer-Holden. Shout out of love to CBC Manitoba cameraman Ron Dhaliwal, who helped capture some of the excitement at the screening in Winnipeg. You can now listen to us streaming live on the CBC News app. Just go to the local tab and press play wherever you are. You can also find and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty 1 territory. Kanaskana Mitnawa, Agosay.